This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com with Pete Sampson and Tim O'Malley. I'm Tim Priester. It is Monday, April 10th. We have a ton to talk about. Tim and I had an opportunity to observe practice on Friday. I want to remind people before we get into all of the things we need to discuss here regarding the football program on Thursday, April 13th, Jake Brown will be with Pete Sampson to talk nothing but recruiting. Jake Brown's last podcast with Notre Dame, with Irish Illustrated, rather, as he ventures into another branch of journalism. Well, we need to talk today about some of the things that have been happening. Spencer Perry's transfer that will be coming up here shortly, the 180-degree turn conversation we had with three of the captains on Friday. And we haven't discussed Brian Kelly and his comments about DeShone Kizer, at least not on our podcast. And then Body by Bayless and a whole bunch of other things going on here this spring. Let's start with, what do you want to start with? Let's start with, we got a lot to cover here in this segment.
I feel like all you and I have talked about in the last 5 days is the Brian Kelly, DeShone Kizer non-story. Yeah. So Pete, what do you feel about
that? Okay, for starters, this actually made me mad on vacation when I saw it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what I hate about the media and how people consume media. And because it's like, okay, if the headline was just breaking, head coach says quarterback with 12-11 career record needs more development, you'd be like, well, duh. So what, I mean, what Brian Kelly says, absolutely true. DeShone Kizer needs a lot more work. And you saw that all last season. I thought you saw that a little bit during his pro day where I thought he was good but not great. When he's talking about defining who he is as a quarterback as his offseason goal, when he's talking about how he's 20 pounds overweight, when he's talking about how his footwork's all over the place. I mean, clearly this is a developmental quarterback who could have developed at Notre Dame next year. And forget the whole, like, come back for your degree, like, that sort of more romantic part of it. I get that. That's true. I mean, you don't really put in 3 years here without finishing your fourth, because that doesn't make sense to bust your ass in the classroom like that. But just clearly from a football perspective, yeah, he needs a lot more work. But the notion that people are going to use Brian Kelly's comments against Notre Dame in recruiting when he just said what is factually true, I don't get that at all. And it just seems like it's one of those things where people, they read the headline and don't read the story, and then we're just having a debate about the headline. If you listen to the whole interview, Brian Kelly is quite complimentary about DeShone Kizer, as he was last week, the last time you guys talked to him, but people can't take the extra 2 minutes to figure out what the whole story is. And that is beside the point, because that what Brian Kelly said is just accurate. DeShone Kizer needs a lot more work.
It would be like me reporting on the Notre Dame-Syracuse football game last year when Notre Dame scored 50 points and just bringing up the long punt return Syracuse had as my headline. Irish special teams fails in Syracuse punt return as my story. And then everything else is just forgotten. I mean, they literally pulled the one little thing he said that was totally true and turned it into the story. You easily could have tweeted, Kelly says Kizer's best quarterback
in
the draft.
That's what Kelly said himself on Friday, and he was correct.
We talked about it on the radio. Kelly says Kizer's best quarterback in the draft. Could have used some more seasoning.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's the ultimate taking out of context example that there is. I had somebody that should know better tell me that DeShone Kizer lost millions of dollars because of Brian Kelly's comment. DeShone Kizer lost millions of dollars because he's now the number three rated quarterback on the board. Could he go earlier? Yes, certainly. And should he? Yeah, maybe, because he probably is the best quarterback prospect, NFL quarterback prospect overall. But he didn't lose millions of dollars because of Brian Kelly's comment that was taken out of context. That's nonsense. He lost millions of dollars because he had a lousy combine. A lousy combine. He was already in shape, but they saw the film from last season. And, you know, Kelly's getting punished for speaking the truth, as you say, Pete. Now, Dabo Swinney can say, he can compare DeShone Watson to Michael Jordan or a Michael Jordan-type athlete. He won the national title. He can say whatever he wants to say. But those words will come back and haunt him if DeShone Watson doesn't become a quality NFL quarterback. which I mean, don't you have doubts about whether he's going to be a...
Yeah, it's like, I think we all remember the LeBron James of high school football that ended up at Notre Dame and Jimmy Clausen. I mean, people say that stuff and you wear it around the rest of your life until you're out of sports entirely. I agree exactly what, Tim, you're saying. This costs DeShone Kizer $0 and 0 cents. The combine, his junior year, the 12-11 record. I mean, at some point, when how much longer do we have to sit here and listen to the quarterbacks are judged by wins and losses, not stats, and then not look at the flip side of that when you're not winning a bunch of games and you're taking a bunch of losses and you can't get the team over the finish line in the fourth quarter repeatedly? You know, at some point, the player has to own that a little bit.
And that was after the defense stabilized over the final two-thirds of the regular season.
Yeah, so it just...
I feel like we've been... and I feel like we've been talking about this forever, but we haven't talked about it on podcasts, and we wanted to get your insight on it,
too. I just hate everything about it.
I do, too. To play devil's advocate, the one thing he could have done was not answer the question for Brady Quinn and Sirius Radio the way he truthfully answered it. You could know that you're going to...
But
you can say too much because
that's one of the reasons that I hate about it. Because it's like, okay, we want to have head coach X on to do this interview. Head coach X gives us an honest answer. Why did head coach X give you that honest answer?
That's what I said last week. He would be criticized for not saying enough.
You could
or
say,
for using coach speak.
And we thought. I really think that he got comfortable with Brady Quinn too.
Sure,
kind of sitting there talking to Brady Quinn about it.
And we all know this, having dealt with him in one-on-one situations.
Yeah.
He's a completely different guy there. Much more relaxed, sort of like let stuff flow and hang out there. We're not having those conversations.
I don't think he said anything wrong.
I don't think he said too much.
I don't think he needed to change anything that he said. If you take the entire interview fully,
right.
It's all covered in there. Everybody knows DeShone Kizer needs improvement. Everybody knows that.
You agree he's being punished for people because of a bad football season.
Absolutely.
And for
Thursday thoughts was about this is about 4-8. This isn't about what Brian Kelly actually said.
There's no delicate sensibilities among Irish fans being offended. If Brandon Wimbush goes 13-1 and Kelly goes, I kind of wish he came back for a senior year. Like, all right, whatever, dude. That's cool. That's fine with me. It's no big deal.
There's enough to be critical of Brian Kelly. We don't have to make stuff up. And that's what this is.
Let's segue into the 180-degree turn, because that is more the legitimate, okay, what happened last year, what's going on now.
Doesn't matter, everything's great.
Yeah, everything's awesome in spring practice, which it has been for, I think, 125 straight years. That's what spring practice is about. And especially after a down season. Well, I think after all seasons. If it's an up season... Spring practice is about building on this. If it's a down season, spring practice is about bouncing
this is my, back. This is the 36th time I've heard about how great things are in the spring. And that's not really what the story was about. It wasn't so much them saying, hey, we're going to win 10 games in the fall. It was about a change of attitude.
Yeah.
And I was joking with Pete, we talk about not relitigating everything, but it's totally impossible, not to look back at Van Gorder, not to look at Brian Kelly's... Is negligence too strong of a word? I don't think it is. Was it unconscious negligence? That's the same as negligence when you're the head coach. Whatever word you want to use, there's so much to criticize from last year that you can't help but compare it against what three captains were saying on Friday. And I thought Tranquil said, a couple really interesting things about it wasn't so much the expectation that they would lose, but there was certainly uncertainty that they would win. And he said, the whole idea of play like a champion, I don't think anyone really bought into that last year.
Yeah, that was a great quote. You see sort of the talk about the offseason, you see some of the physical results that the players are putting up on social media and sort of before and after photos, which is something Matt Bayless did at Mississippi State, too. It was sort of pre-Twitter, so we weren't all getting instant
and we didn't follow Mississippi State's Twitter either.
Yeah, exactly. Probably missed it entirely. It's different. And at a minimum, I think some of these gains in vertical jumps and decreases in body fat and weight, and there's actual numbers here that go beyond just the quote-unquote eye test. You have to at least be cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
And I have said this to many people about my opinion of this season and the reboot of the program. To me, it's made this season really, really interesting and something that if you're a casual fan or hardcore fan, should get you back interested and invested in watching Notre Dame football with a reservation, but some hope of that things are going to be better. I think enough has changed. There's enough interesting things going on here that it's not going to be a stale repeat of last year.
It just seems like a lot of accountability from people like Mike McGlinchey, well, starting with Brian Kelly, down that everything had to change. We can talk about should it have been at that point, but everything has to change, but that doesn't matter. They've admitted it does have to change. That's where they gave Tim the 180-degree turn. It was Mike McGlinchey that answered your question directly. It's completely opposite. Why? I don't know. But does that matter anymore?
Well, the why is because of the overhaul.
But how can it doesn't matter at this point. It fell, and now they're going back. They're obviously focused on it. I go back to what one assistant coach told me when I said something about mental toughness. There's no such thing. It's just toughness. You can't be mentally strong and physically weak. You can't be physically strong and mentally weak. It's a great point. Obviously, they're engaged in the new regime, and really, I'm glad they're embracing it, and I think eventually it's impossible not to relitigate it, but you do have to just give them the benefit of the doubt at this point.
Yeah, and I understand the notion that, hey, I'm not going to believe it till I see it in the fall. Okay?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
but that's why we have a website, so we can report on the progress as they get to that.
Yeah, and if we're looking at people that Brian Kelly mentioned, a couple of people having their best spring. If I look at Mike McGlinchey and think, my gosh, you can tell the difference in this guy, and it wasn't like he was a shrinking violet prior. If you look at Mike McGlinchey, is when he walked into that room to the podium, he is half of a mountain.
Yes.
Let me tell you
something. A mountain just walked into the room.
He's monstrous.
At Pro Day, I was talking to somebody who works in the Goob, and we were talking about the strike program, and McGlinchey walked by, and I was just like, man, God, the hat looks huge. And he said, can you imagine if he was in the strength program for the last 3 years?
Yeah. Always huge.
Yeah.
But now he looks like a well-conditioned huge.
There's definition there that was not there before. So again, that goes back to they had a few missing links in the strength program over the last few years, and those seem to be filled in a hurry.
Including being on time, because I was talking to Equinemius St. Brown, who gave a really good interview, and I asked him, how does it erode? Because you were here for 2015, you played, you had a really good team. He goes, I don't know how it erodes, but we're really paying more attention now. Guys aren't walking in late all the time, and I just didn't want to respond to that to him, because it's not his fault that he offered that,
Tell me more.
But that's negligence.
Yeah, that is. But the funny part, we should tell it, at the press conference when McGlinchey left, about 2 minutes later, Greer Martini came in. There was an actual comment from the reporters, oh my God, you're so much smaller than he is, and moving the microphone down, because Martini looks bigger too, but they just look like different humans. There's McGlinchey's 6 inches taller and 2 feet wider. there was a different spectacle standing in front of us.
Should we get into what you guys saw?
Yeah, I want to talk about Friday. Yeah, Friday.
Players that impressed you individually. I mean, reading your practice reports, I got to say, I was not expecting to read nearly as much about Miles Boykin as you guys wrote. Tony Jones, maybe. But it sounded like there were some interesting names that were making moves.
They weren't in pads on Friday, but I didn't really think anything of that. Well, first of all, because we had a full practice to watch, so anything that we get to see during the spring, is exciting. But they weren't in full pads, so I guess there's a caveat here with anything that we say. But I kind of tracked the 7-on-7 throws, and Wimbush was 17-of-23, and it's just, He's good every time we see him, and he found Miles Boykin 3 times and Sanders 3 times, and Ian Book. I thought it was an interesting comment from Tommy Reese earlier in the week that he says when he's in a pocket and sets his feet, he can make all the throws. Now he can't make the throws with the power that Wimbush does, but he was 16-for-22, and again, it's not full pads, so it's not an accurate indication. But they both threw the ball well, and I think we talked about this before, maybe you saw a pass that Wimbush threw somewhere along the line in spring that could have been picked off. The only one I remember is the one that Watkins could have picked off on Friday.
Yeah, and it was notable because we thought, well, it's a bad pass. You don't see that. I thought it was a bad throw. He hasn't made.
But I think it might have been a route thing because Boykin was underneath, and I'm not sure who was coming on the backside. But I think there was some confusion as to who was being thrown to. So that is the only pass that I can think of where he should have been picked off. Watkins should have picked it off, and that's an important play for him on the other side that he needs to make.
And we should point out that this is 7-on-7 and 1-on-1. So 17-20 is not getting rushed by guys coming in. It is built a little bit, especially 1-on-1. It was built more for the offense to succeed.
Absolutely.
It's really difficult, which brings me to guys like Julian Love, who's picking off passes in 1-on-1 drills. That's tough to do, especially on in routes. And Troy Pride, you know, I know that Todd Light mentioned he's behind Love and Watkins in part because his strength isn't up to par because he ran track. Actually, Todd Light brought that up. Dante Vaughn is a little bit behind because he hasn't been able to finish many practices with back spasms. But Troy Pride had a great day. I had him, first of all, he stripped Chase Claypool of a one-on-one ball on a dig route. Delete, Pete. Yeah. And Claypool was absolutely destroying people. He was matched up against safeties. And I felt bad because Jalen Elliott, who had a good day otherwise, was matched one-on-one with Claypool on about three different reps. And it's just not the matchup you want. But Pride looked good to me. I mean, when you're doing one-on-one coverage skills, that's not all cornerbacks have to do, obviously, but he looked really good in that regard.
With regard to Boykin, I mean, I think the biggest difference with Boykin, we've seen him in the past, how many times have we seen a slant route where he's, you know, when he can make that catch, he's dangerous and long in the open field. The problem is consistency catching the football. And he had the broken finger last year, and so that was an issue, but he's just catching the ball really well. And when you... And I know it's because of their length, but with Claypool, and you see it with St. Brown, who was a little bit slow by a hamstring, and Boykin, and certainly Alizé Jones. I mean, those guys are, because they're so long, they're so capable of getting separation with the DB as the ball arrives, and I think St. Brown's really good at that. These are, I mean, I love what Chip Long is doing with the double tight end, because it's a real matchup problem, and it's interesting that Sanders and Fink are now outside receivers. They want those bigger guys on the inside in the slots where A, you can help in the blocking scheme, and B, you get really good matchups in there.
I'm all for it. They're reading Monday Musings back in December. Get those guys in there. When you say the two tight ends, and that doesn't include the big bodies of Boykin, Claypool, and Equinemius, St. Brown, it is a massive front. You know, I asked Brian Kelly about it. He mentioned you can see where this offense is going. You have big tight ends, big wide receivers, an offensive line they trust, Pride and Adams. He hinted it's a power attack. This is a power up-tempo attack, and that's, I think, obviously it's the spring, but everybody wants to see that.
And I'm not sure if you saw this, Pete, but I asked Kelly about, you know, whether the lines, we always went by WXYZ, and whether those lines have been blurred because of tempo, and it's pretty much, I mean, this is what I saw on Friday. It's pretty much wideouts and slots. But the mixture is interesting because guys like Sanders and Fink are on the outside naturally. St. Brown, Boykin, Alizé Jones, they like to put out there. And this is not to say that none of these guys will line up inside. But mainly, and Stepherson, of course, would probably be an outside guy as well. But mainly the slot guys are the tight ends, Claypool, and the running backs.
Yeah. There seems to be sort of a chance, and I can't wait to see this, Trimble, when I get out there, is just that you could overwhelm somebody with size in a way that Notre Dame has not done in a long time. I mean, I don't remember when they would have a chance to throw out a St. Brown, Claypool, Alizé Jones, Durham Smythe. Like, those would be your four guys. I mean, Durham Smythe is sort of like the smallest of those four guys.
And he's in really good shape. I think there's a burst to him that I haven't seen before.
Yeah, I mean, he's had like a full year removed from the knee and the shoulder surgeries that he had, you know, in 2015. And if you're going to play up-tempo power, you could sub in.
Oh, yeah, Boykin behind
Boykin
him
a little bit.
Stepherson's still a guy. I mean, that's the, you they don't all have to be big. You know, you're subbing in Boykin, and then
Wisher,
you have Wisher
for Smythe.
The outside guys, you have Boykin, Sanders, and Fink.
Yeah, and then just throw a changeup in there with one of those. It's an interesting group. I mean, Chip Long has a ton to work with, more than he's ever had in his career. And if they really want to play up tempo with that size, it could be. You know, I think we think about up tempo as tiring out of defense a little bit. I mean, they just could kick the crap out of somebody at times if you're undersized, and they're just coming at you and like, hey, it's great. 92 plays of Quentin Nelson. That sounds awesome. You know, with Alizé Jones and Chase Claypool hammering at corners and safeties. That there's some really interesting possibilities there.
An interesting comment Friday from Brian Kelly, basically calling Tony Jones Jr. a number one running back. Now, of course, he won't be as long as Josh Adams is healthy, but from a standpoint of running the football, being elusive, running with a little bit of power, the ability to catch the football, and the thing that tops it all off is his ability to not only execute the pass protection, but to understand it and make the adjustment, which you never hear for a young running back. So that's real promising. I don't know where that leaves Dexter Williams, but I think that Chip Long, I've said this before, with his background at Arizona State where they used multiple backs, guys that ran it, guys that caught it, I think there's a role for all three.
I think there is too, because 2 days before the arrest happened last year, Autry Denson said Dexter Williams was their best at pass protection, and that included Torian Fulston and Josh Adams, and he was a young sophomore. Yeah. So that it just comes natural to him too. Obviously, there's still a bit of a disconnect with getting him on the field and being a consistent player. Maybe it's trusting his hole, maybe it's trusting the line, but if he's your third guy and you're able to use him, that's great. As long as you're able to use him.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to get a guy that can hit a home run like that, too, and it's ideal he'd be the number three.
I think Tommy Kramer is, and maybe it's the odd-even days that we've seen practices, but I just think that, I think when all is said and done, my hunch is that Harry Hiestand's going to choose Tommy Kramer as a starter over Eichenberg, and we've talked about this all spring. He's the bigger body. He's more of a power guy. You know, he could play guard, and Eichenberg's better in, you know, pass protection. So it'll be interesting to see how that all pans out. We remember Brian Kelly's comments about Eichenberg last fall, but that doesn't always mean something. We know that. Yeah, rarely in a lot of instances. But that's a good competition. I think anybody in the country would want to have those two guys. If you had one open spot, and you said you've got Liam Eichenberg and Tommy Kramer to battle it out, unless you're Alabama or whoever, you'd say, okay, I'll take that competition. I'll take the winner of that.
Yeah, because, I mean, Kramer ends up as a 4-year starter. Eichenberg ends up as a 3-year starter.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're really going to get 7 years of starting tackles out of those two, I mean, that is a dream class, regardless of whether Parker Boudreau ever gets on the field, to get 7 years of starting experience at two really premium positions. So I like both those guys. I mean, what I've seen in practice so far, they both look like they can answer the bell this fall. So
Nate, you did see one even practice, right? The coaches' clinic, and Eichenberger was.
Yes.
I just fell into the Brian Kelly trap. Eichenberger, I just did it. Eichenberg was the starter, right?
Or he was that
day. They are alternating at least for it.
I like Aaron Banks. I do. I mean, I thought when Aaron Banks came in, I was thinking like Daniel Cage, like he's not going to be very mobile, not going to be able to move around. I'm not saying he's ready to play. I'm saying he's a more mobile left guard than anticipated. His stamina looks, I mean, pretty good. Again, we don't see play after play, day after day, but you try to watch a kid a little bit and see how he moves around the football field, and I think he moves pretty well for a really, really big guy.
I liked him from early spring. Yeah. I mean, he was running with the second team over Bivin at that point, but because I thought he'd be sort of like a Chris Stewart type where, you know, maybe laboring a little bit to get in and out. Like some natural athleticism, but not necessarily like agility. But he moves really well. Maybe better than what I saw on his high school tape where you felt like, oh, is this guy going to be a little bit plodding? You know, maybe doesn't have the full package. And to wrap up segment one, Spencer Perry transferred. That's, I think, a recruitment and a development that, hey, it's, we usually don't call 3 stars as their sort of shortcomings in the way that we call it with Perry in terms of agility, flexibility. I think ultimately that sort of did him in. And
I think it was obvious right from the beginning that he was a stiff football player, and change of direction was very deliberate. It's understandable why they didn't want to move him up to Rover. It doesn't sound like that's what the kid thinks that he should be playing. And if that's the case, Notre Dame will take that open scholarship and he will go find a better fit for him.
That's 86 now. They're at number 86. So they'll need one more, which will just come naturally, of course, over the next few months heading into fall, or not even heading into fall camp, somewhere near the beginning of the season.
Yeah, there's no question. You know, Perry is not somebody who is going to impact the roster outside of special teams this year. And there's a chance that he wouldn't impact the roster for the next 2 years. So Probably a good move on his part. He did play a little bit last year, so he can redshirt as 3 years somewhere else. They gave him a full release. That's not something you do when you think that that player might go to a team that could bite you in the butt later. So, you know, Spencer Perry, good. I mean, looks like $1 million in shoulder pads or in a t-shirt, but didn't really have the whole package here. So that's it for segment one, Irish Illustrated Insider. We got a bunch of questions from our readers, so we'll get into that next on segment two. Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider, segment two. Question first from Irish Bob. I'm confused. Are fundamentals the key to scheme, or scheme the key to fundamentals?
I like the question because, I mean, Brian Kelly kind of addressed that. Remember when I asked him about, are you counting on scheme to get you over the hump with what you don't have there up front? And he basically said that fundamentals are key to the scheme. And I get where he's coming from. If you're good at the fundamentals, the scheme will fall in place because it's not overly complicated. The players have picked it up. Niles Morgan's been in heaven this spring because everything's easy for him after what he went through in the first couple of years at Notre Dame. But yes, it's fundamentals are the key to the scheme, right?
It's a great question, but can't we just take the coach at face value for his answer? We have to be so sarcastic all the time. You know, I agree. I like the answer. I like Brian Kelly's answer. I think if you're in the right place and you're doing things correctly, right, your scheme looks better than if you have a really cool scheme and you're running around different directions and playing seven defensive backs against Texas.
Yeah, you need both. It's like, what's more important, cleats or a helmet? Like, I don't know. You need both. Like,
you got to have a helmet.
You do need both, but you're right. And it's like, it's never one thing. You do need both, but they didn't have one of those two things the previous 2 years and four games.
Either of those two.
Which one did they have?
Well, they had a scheme. It was just the players couldn't understand it.
Okay.
And they didn't get off blocks well, and they didn't tackle well. But other than that, it was one hell of a defense.
Griswold 06, it's looking like only a three-man rotation right now at safety, with the likely fourth, an early enrollee, Isaiah Robertson, and the main man being an unimpressive corner coming into last year, that'd be Nick Coleman. The interior defensive line, meanwhile, seems to have less talent, but certainly more depth than the safety position. Which position at this point concerns you more?
I'm just concerned all around.
Yeah, can they concern us equally? It's got to be
like
one of
the fundamentals and scheme of
no,
position.
It starts up front. If you're really good up front and you have some questions on the back end, you can try to compensate for that. But if you have concerns up front, there's a chance that the back end of the defense will get exposed as well.
They have more work to do up front, too. To Mike Elston. You talked to Mike Elston, who did not paint a rosy picture. We asked Mike Elko, what do you tell Brian Kelly when he asks you about the defensive line? He said, I tell him the only thing I can tell him. We're going to make it work. Why do we have to make it work? Because we have no other choice.
Right.
I like Mike Elko. You brought this up multiple times, Tim. Mike Elko is the safeties coach as well. So having young guys learning, it's really good that the coordinator is back there with them. I kind of like the Jalen Elliott potential Nick Coleman.
Well, I like the
Coleman because Coleman can really run back there. Now, if he can just tackle at an acceptable level, would you think that maybe making some plays on the ball and then being able to tackle okay is fine?
Yeah, and I like the idea of you were basically told it's three guys to play two positions.
Yeah.
Unless
Robertson makes that big move.
Right, and that would be great. But, rather than just say, okay, Coleman's this guy and these other two are battling it out for the other position, I think that gives you more versatility.
I agree.
And those are, you can say what you want about Elliott and Studstill and they don't get it yet and all that. You got to get those guys ready to be on the field. Those are good athletes. Those are quality prospects. You've got to get them game ready, and I like the idea of three for two or four for two if it comes to that.
And I'm not sure how this always works, but Brian Kelly also said sometimes when they talk about rotating, it doesn't come to fruition. He mentioned we're going to have safeties that are put in the position where they can work best. You're not going to have one guy back there all the time in one position. So if they can really make a rotation work, that'll be nice to see too.
I I went back and forth on this question because I actually entertained safety as a bigger concern than the interior of the defensive line. And then the more I kept thinking about it, I was like, wait a minute, Mike Elko's the position coach there. And that sort of, they'll be fine.
Absolutely.
Like, that will just work out. And I wrote a story when Elko was hired on this kid, Jesse Bates at Wake Forest,
right.
who was like a 2-star out of Fort Wayne that they signed, redshirted him, and basically was a freshman All-American as a redshirt guy. So somebody who had played less than Devin Sutsil and Jalen Elliott, and he was able to turn this guy into a fringe all-conference honorable mention guy in his first year of action after putting 25 pounds on him. So I think Mike Elko is going to get something out of those guys. There's more material to work with, and I think he's a really great coach. Mike Elston has much less to work with, and that position is a car wreck every play, whereas safety, by virtue of how far they are from the ball, you're not taking that kind of level of punishment every down.
Can you imagine if Notre Dame signed a 2-star DB, our site would crash?
Yes.
It would explode.
It would not go well here. No. On that note, Terry Benedict asks, what do you like most about the Campus Crossroads project, and what do you like the least?
What I'm going to like most is the video board this year. What I might like most last year were those hot dog buns and the relish. It was outstanding.
It was a significant upgrade.
Yeah. No, I mean, it sort of checked out mid-season.
Well, that's fitting.
Yeah. And what I like least, the sun.
Sun's directly in our face.
Freaking brutal up there.
It is so bad, they bought us all sunglasses, so we're not complaining. They literally bought us all Under Armour sunglasses.
It's so bad, I don't mind night games.
Even beyond the sun, I don't have a real good feel for that press box. Maybe because we're a lot higher than we were, but it just doesn't...
The big reveal's coming, though, remember?
What's that?
The chairs are going to be different. They did say we were in chairs.
That would be on my list of necessary improvements.
But they are coming. We were in chairs that were built for a much lower table.
I'm not.
So I feel like I'm sitting at like my kid's table.
Yeah, exactly. But they just said they're bringing them in this year.
I'm not sure that Terry Benedict's question was so specific as it relates to our heartaches in the press box. It was the Campus Crossroads project, so you might have had a bigger vision of how we would respond to that.
But I think the video board will be nice. You see it going up, and you get a little bit more sense of the scope, and we'll really get it at the spring game in a couple of weeks.
It's going to be over. The sound in that stadium is going to be overwhelming from what it's always been. There will be a lot of people, a lot of the older people are not going to like the atmosphere that's created in there. You have to create that atmosphere. Good Lord, they lost 4 home games last year. I mean, you've got to develop.
I mean, there's a chance it will have the same atmosphere of going to a bar and you can't hear the person across from you. Not because somebody else is yelling, it just the music is so
loud. There's
loud.
Your atmosphere. Hopefully that benefits them. Statman72, I understand how schemes disguising blitzes can help create a pass rush, but how is the defense going to force opponents into passing situations? What is going to prevent the opponents from just consistently running over our very questionable defensive line?
It's job one. It's still, just because they're not talking about it, it's job one of the spring and of the August camp is you have to stop the run on first down first. If they can, and you can force them second and sixes and second and sevens, then exotic schemes. The only reason Mike Elko's going to use an exotic scheme is when he has them at the right spot, 3rd and 9. You don't use exotic schemes when it's 3rd and 2. The offense does. That's the problem.
It's the advantage offense.
So the question is a great question.
You've got to get Daniel Cage healthy and much better condition by September, whatever the date is for the first game, 2 or 4. Jerry Tillery has to continue to progress.
I like his spring from my... It's much harder on the defensive and offensive line to like a spring because you don't see as much contact as we do with corners and wide receivers. Yeah. Those are the easiest guys to rate right now, are corners, wide receivers, safeties. Yeah. So we see every drill.
Well, and that's why, Dalen Hayes, I mean, he's very impressive looking, but we have no idea how he's going to withstand an entire season physically on the edge. I mean, pass rush, great, he's going to look doing that, but holding the point of attack, getting off blocks, making tackles, we don't know whether he can do that. And Julian Okwara is behind him, and he's even less likely to be able to get off a block and make a tackle, but can offer pass rush just like Dalen Hayes.
I think one aspect that's worth noting as a sign of encouragement for your defensive line is, Notre Dame was okay in yards per carry allowed last year. They're 4.14, which was 50th.
And that's after, I would say, Texas and Michigan State would have had really good days.
And it factors in no sacks, right, which are negative rush plays.
That's huge. So I think it's a reflection that you had a pretty darn good linebacker core last year.
Yeah. So I don't think he's healthy for eight games.
Too.
I don't expect Notre Dame to get run over or anything like that. So I would toss out that aspect of Statman's question. Now, are Mike Elko's schemes going to like create some mythical pass rush? Probably not. I mean, maybe in a spot here or there. Because look, I think we all looked at Wake Forest last year. I think they had 41 sacks, which was like maybe 12th nationally. Well, the year before, Wake Forest had 20 sacks.
Right.
So people need to temper their expectations that Mike Elko is going to make something out of nothing.
How many would you? What would be an acceptable? And this is just a number, you know. I mean, you could get 8 in one game and excuse the number.
Depends on when they happen.
Yeah, right.
I mean, the 30-31.
Yeah, I'd like to see him get to 30.
I would bet the under on that.
Right, they've only been over it once, and it was when they had Tua and everybody in 2012.
So I'm going to bet the under.
Yeah. But they've hit the 26-27 range before, so that would be...
Yeah, and I think that would be fine. I don't think you're asking for a great pass-rushing team. You're just asking for, okay, the threat of a pass rush.
Yeah, pressures, you know, quarterback hurries, those things.
What you guys are forgetting is it's time to get to play 14 games, not just 13.
14? Oh. Well, then we'll figure it out by average per game.
Irish Eyes, 46. We need help on the interior DL. What is the status with Pagano?
Not very good.
I have an update for you on that one. Notre Dame does not expect that they're in it any longer with Scott Pagano. And there's a chance he may actually just end up back at Clemson and do his fifth year there. You know, thank God Clemson could rebuild its defensive line at that case. But, Notre Dame expects that they are out. They don't believe he's coming here. He visited Oregon over the weekend. That was his last official visit. Should have a decision sometime soon, but don't expect it to be Notre Dame now.
Patriots. This reminds me of the Patriots. Rich person problems. Clemson, let him come back. The Patriots don't know where to hang their fifth banner. They can't find a spot in the new
in the design. Great.
Yeah, that's their problem going on. Clemson.
And the great
has
thing
about
for
it.
Clemson is that they didn't have to spend a dime on this recruiting process. It was Pagano that was spending all the money flying all over the country.
No, I mean, the schools were paying to fly Pagano all over the country.
Oh, okay. Well, then Clemson can win this recruiting battle without spending a penny.
Yeah, Clemson. Just after picking up a 5-star defensive end over the weekend, maybe they'll get Scott Pagano as well.
Speaking of which, ND025876, Kelly has been making excuses lately about the talent he has, in essence resigning himself to being outgunned at certain positions. As head coach, isn't he responsible for the talent on the team? Where is the accountability? And this question comes from Friday's press conference where we asked about safeties. And he said, I think we all know there's no 6'1", 215-pound star walking through the doors.
Okay. Well, I don't think that Brian Kelly's been making excuses all spring about his talent. If you focus on that one comment, like the Kaiser comments, then I guess that's excuses. If anything, he said great things about the defensive line that made us all roll our eyes when he said it. But getting to the point of the question, absolutely, it's totally up to Brian Kelly, and the situation they're in is the situation they're in because they weren't vigilant enough at the top.
I actually took it literally. There's not a 6'1", 215-pound safety walking through the door, so he really might have meant it literally.
He was correct.
No, they asked him about what the question was, what do you have, do you have something on the horizon? That doesn't mean in 2019. He's talking about this year's team. He doesn't have a 6'1", 215-pound top safety prospect walking through the door.
Isaiah Robertson...
He's that big.
Yeah, he's that big, and he's a little taller than that. He was a 4-star prospect. I don't know if he runs a 4.5, but he's already here. So maybe that he was disqualified from this question.
I don't think Brian Kelly's making excuses this spring, but...
They have issues made in the past about getting...
It was an issue three years ago.
An issue 3 years ago.
And I was like, I wanted to throw this in for a defensive line question earlier, but I mean, can you remember a good Notre Dame defense that didn't have at least one really good, stout, senior defensive lineman? And I started going through the Kelly class, or Kelly teams. I mean, I cannot find one I can't find a team that was without a good senior defensive lineman at all. This might be one of those teams. other than 2014, which was
that's a good point. I am very hopeful for Jay Hayes, and he's a senior with 2 years of eligibility. I think Jay Hayes is going to be a real solid player for them. I don't see him get pushed off the ball, and he's probably not going to be an 8-sack guy, but again, that's where scheme and bring guys from different areas can create sacks for interior defensive linemen and somebody that's not a great pass rush defensive end. But your point's taken, Pete, and that, you know, that's, we see it year after year. Yeah. You're not going to win championships. You're not going to get to playoffs. You're not going to play in major bowls if you don't have real quality up front on defense.
I mean, when I was looking through previous Kelly teams for, like, senior defensive linemen, I was struck by, like, well, if you could go back to 2010 and give me Kerry Neal and Ian Williams.
And healthy Ethan Johnson and...
Yeah, I mean, Ethan Johnson and Darius Fleming would be the 2011 team.
Oh, seniors, I'm sorry.
Seniors. Yeah. If you could, I mean, that would be a big upgrade for what they have. I mean, never mind, like, the Lewis Nix, Shembos, Capron Lewis Moore, Dale Quara, or even, you know, Rochelle Jaron Jones sort of last year. I mean, the Trombetti Cage that's not going to get you to a college football playoff if you're just looking at your senior defensive linemen. So I think that's, unfortunately,
in their last year of eligibility.
Yeah, okay. Unfortunately, their struggles on the recruiting trail from 3 years ago and 4 years ago are what is showing up right now. And it's just, you got to have senior defensive linemen if you're a place like Notre Dame, and they're a little bit short in that department.
SR5452, with the new offensive coordinator, will Indy huddle or look over to the sideline? And do you think they'll ever try three tight ends on the field at once?
They will not huddle.
They won't huddle at all.
They haven't been huddling at all for a long time. But looking over the sideline thing is, we're just hoping they won't. We think it's going to go a lot faster. Everything every player has said is there's an adjustment to the new offense, and that's going fast and still executing. So, I mean, at times, you're going to look over, obviously, but I don't think it's supposed to be. It's not going to start out as a large part of the plan that Wimbush is checking with the sidelines on every play.
That'll come into play where Chip Long says that he can control the tempo.
Yeah. During the game, at some point, you're going
to
slow it down.
So, you're going to have occasions where they're looking to the sideline, but that... I don't think that, generally speaking, that's the intent. It's to line up. That's why there are slots and wideouts, and they're not flipping the field to get realigned in X, Y, W, Z. So definitely no huddle. And then we'll see, the pace will fluctuate. But I think the intent is to be quick.
I think the intent is, the goal is to be quick, put all the pressure on them. And then, I mean, if you're up by 17 points in the fourth quarter, it is okay to downshift a little and run some clock. If you're just great at operating fast, you can score a touchdown. That's better than running clock. But it's okay to sometimes start bleeding some clock when you have the lead.
Absolutely. And the point's been made by some of our readers about, you know, if your defense is struggling, do you really want to go fast? And that's an example of where you try to play the offense off the defense and slow things down a little bit. I do think for Brandon Wimbush, you know, the faster, the better. Yeah. You know, the more just pace mismatches you create, because they're running around trying to defend. You string a couple plays together, and the defense is on its heels a little bit, and boom, you want to strike with Brandon Wimbush, you know, on the edge. Pete, you were gone, but then when we were in a couple weeks ago in a couple of their outside practices, man, when he hits the corner on the read option, that is one big... fast athlete on the edge, it can create a lot of problems.
One more part of this question: will they try three tight ends on the field? He's definitely open to it, but you also have big-bodied wide receivers that would stress you more than Nick Wisher as your third tight end
inside the 5-yard line.
Sure, yeah, because Wisher can make plays in the passing game and in the red zone too.
Well, in both Claypool and Elizay Jones, you really have wide-out slash tight end.
Boykins that size
athletes, right?
If you put out Smythe, Wisher and Alize Jones, like, technically that's a 3-10 alignment, but Alize Jones is going to be inside the numbers.
I haven't seen three on the field, but it's mainly because of the size of the other wideout, so I don't think it's necessary. And Claypool looks like a really, really good blocker, so he gives you that tight end skill.
Combo Twitter question here. It's at the quarterback position from Greg Flaming, who wants to know, how many quarterback battles would Brandon Wimbush have won in the previous 7 years of the Brian Kelly era? And Irish Badger wants to know, based on what you've seen from Ian Book through 3 weeks of practice, do you think he's good enough to be a number two?
Well, he'd have won in 10 over Christ and nobody else. He'd have won in 11 over Christ and Reese. I'm not sure about 12. Let's see, he's a junior. I think he would have because Everett's a redshirt freshman. Yeah, so he probably would have won in 12 because of the off-field concerns for Everett in the classroom. In 13 was Reese alone, so he certainly would have won that one. In 14, returning Golson versus this current Wimbush. That's an interesting question. I think that's the...
That's a toss-up.
That, I think maybe Golson wins that because he's coming back to your program. Otherwise, he doesn't come back to your program. It's like 6-1 half to kicker to the egg here. He's not coming back to lose.
Yeah.
15.
Certainly would have beaten out Zaire.
Certainly would have beaten out Zaire. And last year, he would not have beaten out a returning Deshaun Kaiser, I don't think.
So it's,
although he almost lost to a returning hobbled Malik Zaire. So
five of the seven.
And with regard to Ian Book, after talking to Tom Reese the other day, I want to call him Tom, but we can call him Tommy. He said he doesn't care about that. But look, I thought about this about Ian Book when he came in, and then hearing Reese say this the other day backs that up. I think they can win with him at quarterback. That's really contingent on your defense now. But you know, he's not as dynamic as Wimbush. He can't make all those plays, but I think that you can give him a menu that he can have success with.
We're about to hit a tangent, but I was going to write about this. Let's just talk about it. Book and a walk-on, Van Gorder, and an incoming quarterback is very, and a junior that everybody is extremely high on. It's similar to Kelly's first year here. Crist was the only obvious starting quarterback. Your only backups were early enrollee, Tommy Reese, which is Book's a little ahead of him, but not really, because Reese was a football
Similar skill set, in my opinion.
Nate Montana was your walk-on going through, and Andrew Hendricks was coming in for your... we have anecdotal evidence on Andrew Hendricks. Andrew Hendricks was coming in as an athlete.
You're saying...
Freshman.
No, I think Book's a better athlete than Reese.
Oh, yeah.
No,
abilities, though.
I think that Ian Book is Tommy Reese plus. Like, with some mobility... And a little bit better arm strength. But, like, when I watch him play, he reminds me a lot of Tommy Reese, just, like, 10% better in everything.
Yeah, and I think he has a good knowledge of the game, too. I mean, Reese probably has, because of his background. Yeah, I mean, you can't take that away from Tommy Reese, that was a really, really smart quarterback.
Part of his skill set.
Yeah.
That's why he was able to...
You know, I think you have with Book, you can work the edges that you couldn't work with Reese. That's one difference physically.
And I think people are higher on Wimbush than Chris coming off of the knee injury. We have to remember this is post knee injury. Yeah. Chris.
Dave Chris was a 5-star prospect in some places. Yes. I mean, that people are like, well, get this Clawson guy out of here. We've seen this Chris. I mean, he looks amazing. But yeah, I mean, Wimbush, he was a fringe 5-star prospect in some places. So it's minus the knee, and we've seen a little bit, which I guess, you go back to that Washington State game, like, oh, that pass to John Goodman was amazing. That arm strength.
We did dedicate a podcast to that pass. Yes. It was huge.
You don't have any more there, Pete? Last one here to wrap things up from 1988 champs. What's your go-to item with grilling season upon us?
Good question. I'm going to start this one off, coming back from...
Eichenburgers.
Yeah.
Eichenburgers and hot dogs. That's what that's what my 3-year-old likes.
Lots of relish.
I think this could be summed up real easily. Red meat and cold beer.
I was going to say that.
Everything else is like just a supplement.
Ribeye with a little coffee rub, I found out about.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
And if you have to be healthy, salmon and dill.
Yeah, I guess he said go-to item, not necessarily the go-to meat that's on the grill.
Right. Yes.
Did you guys grill out yesterday? Because it was a grill-out day in South Bend.
It was very nice out yesterday. Yeah,
It wasn't nice after being in Mexico for 2 weeks.
Oh, well...
It's like, what do you mean? Welcome. I can't have a margarita at 3 p.m.
All right, we're gonna wrap up today. But Thursday, special podcast. Pete Sampson with Jake Brown in his final appearance with IrishIllustrated.com. Don't miss that. We're taping that in the morning. April 13th. Thursday, and we'll be back to talk Notre Dame football in general a week from today on April 17th.
A week from Thursday.
Thank you.
We will not have access
because we won't have access
a week from Wednesday. So we will be back the day after a full open practice.
All right. If I haven't confused you enough,
A little spring game preview at that point.
13th and 20th. Yes.
All right. Thanks for listening to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Pete Sampson, as always, joined by Tim Priester and Tim O'Malley.